on People Power Radio.
Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local seasonal and organic delights at Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan, oh yes, vegan, and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farmstar Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week, with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, and they're located at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also brought to you by the third annual Walk MS North State, finding a cure to multiple sclerosis. The Walk MS North State is Sunday, April 30th in Bidwell Park, with 1 and 3 mile routes. Proceeds will support cutting-edge MS research, life-changing programs and services for people living with MS, and together we are stronger. Registration and information at walkms.org. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or streaming on the web at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Our very special guest today is Nina Zamudio, who will talk about personal choice, consumerism, and sustainability. From a rancher in a pricey two-story farmhouse to a vegan minimalist in a 77-square-foot shed, North State native Nina Zamudio let go of her possessions, searched the internet for small houses, and followed her curiosity, which led to a dream, which led to an accomplishment. Several accomplishments, actually. Welcome, Nina. Tell our listeners a little bit about your journey, maybe starting with what led you to go vegan, and then we'll hear about how you came to build such a tiny house.
Thank you both for being here. I'm very honored. I am here to talk about a couple of things, and I'm happy to be able to be on such a great radio show. I started out with veganism right here in Chico with the Chico Vegan Meetup Group.
What? Oh, near and dear to my heart.
So health reasons led me to look for answers for lactose intolerant options. And so I came actually to Jeannie and said, I probably won't go vegan, but I need some help here. And she steered me to the group and the community within that group, which was great. And we had tours at grocery stores and get-ups with food involved, of course. And then, oddly enough, Georges Laroque, for you hockey fans, will know the name from the Oilers up in Canada. I saw him on a spot on TV, just a really quick spot, and he was impassioned, and he's a big hulking guy.
Yeah, I looked him up. He was an enforcer. Yeah. Right? So he wasn't like your goalie or one of your forwards or something like that. He was like
King
the blocker,
George.
Right?
King George.
So he kind of looks like me, is what you guys are saying.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Right.
Look him up. I emailed him. And after his impassioned plea and, you know, for the animals, and he emailed me back, and we had a good conversation. Uh-huh. And he said, you know, you need to watch Earthlings. And I did, and you cannot unsee and unlearn those things.
I did not know you had seen Earthlings. That's pretty heavy stuff.
I became vegan right then and there, and I thanked him for it. I knew things, but out in the ether. So when I saw and learned the hard way. Yeah. Earthlings is hard hitting.
Yeah.
And so, that's how I became vegan. And then really tuned into the group and learned.
That's great. So I just want to point out that for our listeners who don't know, Earthlings is about a 90-minute documentary on the horrors of animal agriculture, of the fur industry, of whaling, and a bunch of other horrific uses. Oh, and also laboratory animals, which we don't get into that much on the show, but it's definitely an issue. So, and you can find it online. I think I believe parts of it are free online, and it is eye-opening and mind-opening for many people.
Yes.
But it is hard to take.
Right. It gets to your soul.
Yeah.
It really does. So that's how I became vegan. And the tiny house...
I actually have a question.
Yeah.
So going back to lactose intolerant,
yes.
I assume you've been lactose intolerant your whole life.
Yes, but I didn't have a name for it. Not until later did I hear others talking about it, and it sounded like, oh, I think I have that. Mm. And so I took lactate pills to help deal with it, which is a whole other set of problems with that pill, or, you know, pills of that ilk. And so I decided to just stop.
And so with giving up dairy, I mean, those issues went away. You feel much better.
Yes. Quickly.
Is that kind of maybe kind of frustrating where you're like, I could have done this 20 years ago and not had these.
Yes. I feel kind of stupid now.
Yeah. No, you're not stupid. You're very smart. You made the change, right? Most people will just be like, I did this my whole life. Why change?
Yeah. I always feel uncomfortable after I have milk or cheese or ice cream. And it's just what I put up with.
Well, I won't describe what happened to me, but it was not pleasant.
We have many listeners. Uh-oh.
What was that? Let's carry on.
I think Jeannie heard some solar flare interference.
Or something.
Interesting. So that just goes to show people that, you know, if you are kind of noticing those symptoms after eating lots of, sour cream cheese burritos, sometimes that's not just a food coma. Sometimes you are lactose intolerant, and you might try cutting out the dairy and see if you feel better. Let's see.
It is a different, everybody reacts differently,
right,
for sure. Mine was a little bit more severe, and I think maybe I was reacting and didn't know it, but when it got severe to the point where I couldn't ignore it, that's when I turned to veganism and options.
Awesome. Did you have some questions, Jeannie?
No. I mean, so like you're sort of health-oriented in terms of what got you on the on-ramp for not eating animal products.
Right.
But it wasn't like you were strictly health-oriented.
No, it was just selfish reasons.
Yeah.
I was trying to mitigate this one problem. But luckily, I found a whole bunch of information and support that, you know, has kept me on the vegan path. And I have tried to bring others in, too, because it's the way to go.
Well, I think also we can say that you probably lead by example.
Okay? Well, I hope so.
Without being like a, you know, a bossy vegan, you know.
I don't know. We'd have to ask my friends and see.
All right. So you went vegan, and I think that started well before you started thinking about other aspects of your life, because ultimately you made a lot of other changes in your life.
I did. Well, my mother passed away, and I had to deal with all of her things, her stuff. And it was a lot of stuff. And I would say a little borderline hoarder, you know, issues.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to say it because that sounds harsh.
About just advanced collecting?
Okay. Yeah. And she was born in 1924. She had a long life to collect her things. And so it took me about a year to get rid of the stuff to different organizations where it could do the best use, you know, charities. So after I finished her stuff, I started looking at my stuff.
Because that was left.
Right? That's what was left.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd been living in the same house. I lived with her for 8 years, the last 8 years. And I just started getting rid of my things, and it felt better and freer. I knew that I didn't have a child who was going to do what I just did for her with her things. And I thought, well, what's going to happen to my stuff? I'm going to pick people now who I want to give the things to, charities, organizations, all kinds of stuff. And so with the house feeling empty, echoing, I started looking to move to a smaller place. It just seemed ridiculous to be in such a big house. And I didn't really want to rent it out. I didn't want to keep it. I didn't need to. And I found small houses online. I Googled some way to just try to get to a downsized place, and I found tiny houses, which I'd never heard of before.
And so as you were doing that, we were also thinking about your environmental footprint, living in a big house as a single person.
Absolutely. Kind of absolutely. Okay. I did think, you know, this is a waste. I have to heat it. I have to cool it. I have to do, you know, maintenance in the yard, and I am not reaping anything here. I'm just paying. Yeah. I'm just paying into it. And I didn't have a mortgage. It was already paid off. But it just seemed very wasteful. And I thought, if I move closer to my job, I can use my bike. I can, you know, just all that kind of stuff really seemed to make sense at that point, especially.
Okay. So then you found tiny houses,
Tiny houses.
How tiny is tiny?
Well, that depends on you. For some people, 1,200 square feet is tiny.
Okay.
So, you know, it depends on you, your family, your stuff, that kind of thing. For me, it turned out that I was quite happy when I rented a 77 square foot shack in the back of somebody's backyard. I found it on Craigslist. It was quite a sweet little place.
It was a college student, and then it was Nina, it sounds like.
I'm not exactly sure how it was meant to be used, but it did have an air conditioner and a heater. And a big window and a very tiny bathroom and a tiny sink. And I found that it accommodated me and my stuff that I had left quite well.
Okay. It did have a loft?
No.
So that all your living happened on one floor?
One floor.
Wow. Okay.
It was cramped 7 feet across, so I could pretty much touch, you know, one thing, take a step and touch the other wall, you know, easy. Everything was very efficient. I'll just say it's efficient.
Okay. Sounds good.
I mean, I kind of envy that. You know, right now I've kind of, you know, I think a lot of people with a house kind of have their junk room and their junk drawers.
Yes.
And so periodically, if I have guests over, everything gets moved into my office and I'm looking at that stuff. And, you know, I've done pretty good with purging some stuff. But yeah, you know, there's the, well, how many times have I rearranged this around the house? Is it time for it to go? And I went through something similar when my dad passed away and we had to clean up. Remove all his stuff, and it's probably anyone who's gone through this has the same thing. If no disposition was made, first of all, you're making decisions about, you know, all right, there's 500 books here, you know, which ones are sentimental, which ones have value, which one does no one care about, and you're literally, in some case, donating or throwing away somebody's, you know, memories or their junk, because you don't necessarily know. You know, my dad also was from the Great Depression, and I had a good sense of, you know, he got that book because it was free. It wasn't important to him.
Right, yeah.
But still, a lot of, you got to look at every single one, because one might have a letter in it, and it also made me think I need to get my affairs in order, which I have not done. But, you know,
it does get you thinking.
It gets you thinking about what you're carting around, too, and what are you doing with your life and your possessions. So
I'll just share that there was a fellow named, I want to say David Simon? Sam Simon. Sam Simon. He was one of the original writers of The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
He was fabulously wealthy. He did very well from his deal working on The Simpsons. He didn't stay with them towards the end, but he made a lot of money. And he was also vegan and animal rights, and then he contracted cancer, and he very consciously started shedding his wealth so that he could see his money being put to good use in his lifetime while he was still alive.
That's great.
So that was kind of interesting, you know, and just different approaches to what we carry on, because it could be these pots of money too.
That's true,
you know, but.
But that wasn't my deal.
No.
Mine was a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And when I did go through everything, I was lucky enough to tie into the Chico Time Bank. Hmm. I don't know if that's still going on, where it's hours, kind of a barter system. And so I started doing the clean out for other people, whether it be their garages or closets or their whole houses or kitchens. And so I practiced doing it for other people, which was kind of nice.
So you're practicing living in a very small space, and you're practicing repeatedly this process of assessing, keeping some things, getting rid of others.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's different for everybody. There's no one formula. It just, it's case by case. Everybody has different interests and needs.
Yeah, and different reasons for keeping things. They could be emotional. They could be, financial. They could be other reasons.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And so does this pair up with veganism in any way or animal issues as far as you can see? Or is it just that they're both processes?
I think it's a way of having to deal, making relationships with your stuff. Getting, a minimalist has to make that kind of leap, making sense of what is needed, why it's needed, how is it, where is it gotten, is there a better way to go about getting items, when I'm talking about like fair trade versus made in China, that kind of thing. And then veganism is the same thing. You have to make that relationship connection of how you're getting your food. Where is it coming from? Some people just say, okay, I want local, locavores, local food. But I think the leap to veganism might be harder for some people, but I have found that many tiny house people, I have lots of friends that are, they're either vegans, vegetarians, or they're just very conscious of food and the sustainable issues. And I always hope that the people that are making the leaps, smaller leaps, I guess, will make that connection sooner and later.
I think I would imagine that one big component of like the food issue for any tiny houser is decreasing waste.
Right.
Like you don't throw away, like you don't make more than you can eat, so you don't end up like tossing
You don't have that freezer full of old hamburgers sitting around.
Or old veggie burgers or whatever. But yeah, you're much more conscious, I guess, of that.
Yes.
Okay.
I feel like we need Sherry Morgado in here from the Skyway Dharma Center, because this is also a lot about attachment and desire.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense that people that can move into tiny houses or go vegan could do both things, because you've learned already how to let go of these things. Many people would be vegan, ethically, except, these are my foods. I have to eat my foods. I can't change what I'm doing.
Right.
This is my stuff that's on my mantle, that's always been on my mantle, even though it's like cheap stuff from the 70s, but I can't get rid of it.
Yeah. I could never give up cheese, right? That's the classic.
Oh, that's the classic. That was my thing, was I have to give up cheese, so help me. But so replacing, I guess, is one of the things. But you're right, that relationship is important.
The ability to deal with change, mm-hmm. and just know that it's not so terrifying. You're right, you've done one thing like that, you can do the next thing and realize, just kind of take it as it comes.
Right.
So, you ended up designing a house, a tiny house?
No, actually, I found, when I started thinking about this, there weren't a lot of models out there or house plans, but I did find one that was kitchen-centric, which is my deal. And I made some changes to the plans, but then I ended up building it largely on my own with friends.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't hire somebody to do it?
It's like an old-fashioned barn raising.
Yeah. I had enough rudimentary skills, I would call them, but, how hard could it be? You have the plans, and you go buy the lumber, and read some books. I did take a workshop that was a weekend workshop, and then they had a hands-on build for a family. I really liked that idea, and so I had a workshop to kick off my framing, and we had the one professional who was herding cats, and I had people show up, and we raised the walls in 3 days.
Oh, wow.
So we framed my house in 3 days. But it didn't, it didn't go up overnight like people would think a tiny house would. I was working at the time. I got a job at Cineholic.
Really?
Yeah, it was the first one that opened outside of the Berkeley location.
Okay, yeah. And so for folks who don't know, I know I've talked about it on the show before, but Cineholic is an amazing vegan cinnamon roll company. That's like their specialty, and they're a franchise.
Now, yes.
And they are just make really delicious cinnamon buns for everyone, right? They do not survive just by selling to vegans.
Right, right. So. They don't even label their...
Yeah.
they're stuff vegan. But and I had never baked before, so that was new to me. But I became head baker pretty quickly.
Awesome.
And had a great time. But I was, you know, also building my house and working on weekends. And so
wait a minute, where's our cinnamon buns then?
Oh, well, I brought you those.
Those are delicious too.
She's pointing to some delicious cauliflower buffalo style wings. Really good.
Thanks. So anyway, yeah, I built it with friends. I would call that a community build. There are lots of hands, lots of DNA from different people in that house, and lots of really,
I'm sure,
literally great memories around every corner. So it's not perfect, but it's perfect to me.
And that's also, you know, I mean, you built that thing, you know, with friends. That's, you know, that's, even though it's a mobile tiny house, it's still your place on earth versus just some house you bought, and in 3 years you're going to sell it to get the equity to buy a bigger house, to buy a bigger house, even though you don't know why you're getting these bigger and bigger houses, just
exactly.
Because you've got the equity, right?
Right.
Yeah, and it's quite a sense of satisfaction, I think. You know where every nail and bolt and nook and cranny is in that house.
Yes, yes.
That's pretty cool.
That's great. That's really nice. And it has a decent kitchen?
It has a very nice galley-style kitchen.
The kitchen's great, I saw it.
Yeah. It's stainless steel countertops, really deep sink, you know, one of those big fancy faucets that arcs, and you can push it all over the place.
Oh, nice.
And stretch it. And a full-size fridge, which most people in tiny houses have little tiny fridges, and I couldn't do that. Fresh produce, beer, you know. I need my things.
She is a local, folks.
Yeah, where was the first place you went when you came back?
We went to Sierra Nevada Brewery. I am from Chico. Anyway, so what else?
So it's a decent. So no compromise then in terms of the kitchen and
no.
That's great.
No, it fits me and my boyfriend very well. It's 160 square feet. There's two of us in there, and he was already a minimalist beforehand, so he had already practiced living small. I had already done that, so this is a mansion for us.
That's great. That's great. Okay.
And I think, you know, I saw this thing. It's not this thing, this tiny house, and it's very tall. It's got sort of a, what is it, an arched ceiling. Like, it does, it's not the shed she used to live in. Like, the design is very contemporary. And it just feels much bigger than it is, which I think is also the beauty of design, and interior design is also kind of interesting.
Yeah, I kept it nice and light white inside.
Right.
It was a traditional peak roof, but it's a little, the pitch is a little off to accommodate a little more headspace in the loft. So
if anyone hears me sing, my pitch is a little off too.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
If you just tuned in, you've been listening to Non-Human Radio here on KZFR 90.1 FM. With hosts Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms. We've been talking with guest Nina Zamudio about tiny house living and being vegan and being a minimalist. Thank you so much for visiting us here on KZFR.
You know, are there any like websites or sources of information you might recommend to people?
Do you have a blog?
You know, I should. I have little pieces of blogs, I guess I would talk. There's one called A Tiny House Vegan that I just started, and the only blog post on it is about the toilet, which is, it gets pretty into the toilet.
Okay.
I'm sure the listeners were wondering about that.
I know,
that.
Everybody does.
This is another show.
Yes.
That's another show.
Yes. But I on Instagram, you can follow me at A Tiny House Vegan.
Okay. I'll post a link to your Instagram on the on our Facebook page.
Okay.
So awesome. And then I wish you the very best of luck. I know you're heading up north to the Pacific Northwest after
yes.
this. So good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
All right. And now it's time for the Animal Rights Calendar of Events for the Chico area. There's a few things coming up that I want folks to know about and participate in. Tomorrow night, Thursday, April 6th, we have the CARES Reading Group from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Garden Walk Mall at the Center for Design Control, where the Chico Animal Rights and Education Series Book Club, CARES, is back. And we're going to be starting out reading the best-selling book, What a Fish Knows, The Inner Lives of Our Underwater Cousins by author Jonathan Balcom. Speaking of whom, Jonathan Balcom will be coming to Chico State on April 24th. That's why we're reading this book, and he'll be giving a talk on his book. And that will be April 24th at the Arts Building, room 111.
And I think that's facilitated by Robert Jones, who is sneaking around the room as we speak.
Yes,
it is. He's coming up next. I think he's running Sue's show for her.
That's right, yeah. Robert will be filling in on The Real Issue for Sue Hildebrand.
He's also dancing in the background.
I see. Well, I have to stay focused on this, otherwise I'll never get done. Also this Saturday, the always awesome Red Bluff Vegans are holding an Easter-themed, whatever that means to you, potluck. And that's going to be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Saturday, April 8th. And check out their Facebook group so you can RSVP and get the address. And as with the Chico Vegan Potlucks, please bring your own place settings and utensils. Sunday, April 16th, I just want to give a heads up, is Easter. And the 36th annual Pancakes for Peace fundraiser for the Chico Peace and Justice Center is happening on that day. And I have to give them a big show of applause, because they actually always have vegan options. So you can get some vegan pancakes and support a good cause. That's Sunday, April 16th from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. And you can buy tickets at the door. Or you can buy them online at chicopeace.org. And then on Saturday, April 22nd, we have the Chico Vegan Potluck from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Chico Library Community Room. You can meet some kindred folks, and if you're just interested in, like, checking out what a plant-based meal would be like, don't be shy. Please come. We would love to see you. Our theme this month is umami.
Umami?
Yo mommy. Yeah.
Who's mommy?
So after sweet, sour, bitter, and salt, there's a fifth flavor called umami, which is sort of a savory depth of food. It's in mushrooms, it's in wine, it's in
tomatoes, pizza sauce.
Yeah. So, and that is on Saturday, April 22nd, 6:30 to 8:30 at the Chico Library Community Room. And then I just learned about on Sunday, April 23rd from 5 to 7 p.m. in a place to be determined, the Stay Healthy Chico Meetup Group, which you should go to meetup.com and join. Chef Gabe, who is a chef also at the 220 over on at the Hotel Diamond. Chef Gabe will be teaching how to make a Japanese themed dinner. He'll be demonstrating how to prepare your own sushi rolls, how to make mushroom miso soup, edamame, and ginger tea. And there's only 10 spots, so you have to go to meetup.com, get ticket information, and make your reservation. And the last thing I want to talk about is June 2nd through 4th is the Farmed Animal Conference at Animal Place in Grass Valley. I only want to bring it up because it's a long way away, but you'll need to get your tickets now. Carol J. Adams will be speaking. Activist Liz Ross will be giving a talk on race, class, and veganism, exploring the question of whether issues of racism and classism matter when doing advocacy work on behalf of animals.
They matter.
Dr. Linda Alvarez will be speaking on animals, migrants, and structural violence in the factory farming industry, right? Factory farming is bad for animals, it's bad for the workers, and that's what this talk will be about. And also the amazing Patrice Jones, who's a feminist scholar who speaks on intersectionality, will also be giving a talk. She's from Vine Sanctuary. So go check out farmedanimalconference.org and get your tickets for June 2 through 4. So that's it for the calendar. If you have an event or other news to share, send an email to me at chicovegan@gmail.com and tell me about it, or tell me about it at Non-Human Radio on Facebook. We have one last bit of business to take care of, and that's the animal rights quote of the week. Go ahead, Danny.
The animal rights quote of the week is from Andrea Clodagh, Canadian animal rights activist and founder of the 100 for 100 movement and a social justice advocate for humans and non-humans. Andrea wrote, "To examine whether something is humane, first determine if you would want it done to you."
Awesome. Mm. Awesome.
The golden rule.
Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Many thanks to Guillermo Mash of Without a Roof for his engineering assistance and moral support. Wednesdays from 5 to 7 p.m. is one of the standout days of the week for local public affairs programming. Stay tuned for The Real Issue coming up next.
You've been listening to Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, or its staff.
If you missed any portion of this show or you want to listen again, please visit the archives at kzfr.org and search for Non-Human Radio. This is Jeannie Trezino, Danny Toms, and Nina Zamudio signing off.
Be different. Be better. Be kind.
And go vegan!